Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Welcome to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. Bob Farnsworth, founder of Hummingbird Productions, one of the longest-standing full-service music production companies in America. The Nashville-based company has a repertoire of award-winning material that includes Always Coca-Cola, Wrigley's Double Double Your Refreshment, and I Wish I Were an Oscar Mayer Wiener. Bob has also composed music for numerous IMAX signature films. 35 years building Hummingbird Productions, Farnsworth and Hummingbird have worked with innumerable and diverse artists, from Dolly Parton to Arlo Guthrie, from Ray Charles to Stevie Ray Vaughan, and with venues from the Philadelphia Orchestra to the London Symphony and the United Way to the United Nations. Bob speaks and performs across the country about advertising and the power of sonic branding, and he is here with us now. Hello, Bob. How are you, my friend? What is going on?
Is this Joseph I'm speaking to?
This is him. You got me.
Hey. Somehow I had this image of your voice sounding higher, but man, you sound really good. I mean, you sound very professional.
Wait, hold on, Bob. Founder of Hummingbird Productions, one of the greatest standing full-service music production companies in America. Bob Farnsworth is here with us now. Better. Welcome to TNT. Something like that, Bob. Do you feel more cozy now, Bob?
I'm sitting here next to our newly installed, undecorated Christmas tree at home. So, I'm getting the smell of the Christmas tree. So it's really nice. Good environment here with no lights on it yet.
That's kind of amazing. Yeah, that paints a nice picture. It does. I'm getting the holiday feeling. I'm out here in Arizona. I've been a New Yorker for over 25 years, and before that, Ohio. So I'm used to winter, huge winter, and I don't have it at all. I'm in shorts and a tank top basically all day, every day. But the holiday spirit, it still happens. We still feel it out here. It's pretty wild. So
no, that's great. Glad you're feeling it.
Well, thank you for coming on, man. This is a lot to go through with you and what's going on with Hummingbird Productions. And basically, I mean, you also scored a ton of films. I see I have a list of them here. Apostles of Comedy, Home of Freedom, Spirit of Silicon Valley, Philadelphia Symphony, Image, Indiana, Dixie's Diner, I Am Israel. Is this all you, Living Hope, Toxic Soup, Journey to Everest, all these films?
Yeah, those are through the years. I didn't do those last month. That was stuff that was years. Incidentally, can you understand my Southern accent okay?
Yeah, I used to live in Atlanta too. I forgot to tell you that part. I lived in Atlanta for about 4 years, so you sound fine.
Yeah, I have the Southern accent that is not quite the old Southern accent. I like the old Southern accent better, where they don't know what an R is.
Do a little of that for us.
My dad, when we were kids, and we would be going to church, and we put on our little fake ties, you know, and he would always say, "Son, you look sharp as a marble," which would be sharp as a marble, right? He doesn't. The R's did not even exist. And so finally, one day, when I was in the eighth grade, and we always took that as a compliment, you know, it's what you grow up in. Yeah. Every time you dress up, he's, "Son, you look sharp as a marble." And finally, when I was in the eighth grade, I said, "Dad, marbles are not sharp." He said, "That's right, son, that's right." So I don't have that. I like their accent better, and it is kind of sad to see it fading away.
It's enough, though. It's a flavor of it. I like yours. I think yours is better. I think if you were going full no R's, it would be too much in 2022. This is a sort of modern Southern man this is what you want, Bob. You're right okay. in the middle, right where you want to be.
Well, it's also, I'm from Greenville, South Carolina, proudly from Greenville, South Carolina. And it is kind of a, there are people who you can be in another part of the country, and if they kind of know anything about that area, they can say, now, are you from Upper State, South Carolina? It's like, yes, actually, you're
That's
right.
That's funny. Yeah, the different accents.
I love accents. I think it's amazing. And of course, in this politically correct era that we live in, my kids, I'll do the slightest thing. Oh, Bob, what are you thinking? Bob, this is not good. You know, Dad, you can't say that. You know, it's like you're making fun of somebody else. And I say, dog, this is ridiculous. So I can't do my profession is what you're saying, girls, right?
And why does accents have to do with your profession? What do you mean by that?
Oh, because doing commercials, you're constantly putting down stuff like that to demonstrate to the singer or the voiceover person coming in the attitude that you're basically doing. And I'll have people that'll say, well, why are you having me to do this? That sounds fine. So I'll show you in just a minute. Let's right. get you down on, and it'll be some just knockout talent, and you get their thing down. All right, now let's A-B what I did versus what you did, and you'll see why I get you to do it. And then usually they're like, yeah, that's a good point. I do sound pretty good, like meaning them. They agree yeah. that the reason they're doing what they're doing and not me.
It's the thing with comedy, too. It's just this whole idea that if you're sort of, I don't know. To me, like aping accents is a compliment. I always do the English one, like geezers need excitement. You know what I mean, geezer? I love that. And I'm not hating on English people or the geezer culture. Totally. I'm celebrating it. I love it. I think it's amazing. I'm not saying, you know, ha ha, you suck. I'm saying I love you. And this is me celebrating it in a jokey way.
And I have confidence.
Geezer. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, you know my name, Bob.
Hey, listen, the first time I heard, I got off the plane and we were doing a thing in Adelaide, Australia, a tour in Adelaide, Australia. And when I got off the plane and these girls were be like saying, so are we going to get to know you a little bit? Well, I hope so. What did you say? How old are you? 14. 14 years old. You know, I don't know. So 14 years old. So I just love the Australian accent. So it's
well, this
fun.
Is an Australian station you're on right now. TNT is based out of Australia. In fact, we're talking to each other through Australia, even though it's from Arizona to Nashville. We're also going all the way. Our engineer is over there in Australia. He's right here right now with us. So this is a multifaceted. Say what?
I just said we do live in an amazing world, do we not?
Yeah, it is as dark as it's becoming because I think largely because of cancel culture and political correctness, it's getting dumber and dumber and darker all the time. Did you happen to catch the Kanye West interview on Timcast or anything? Or have you been following along with any of that? I want to go into your career, but just quickly.
No, so the answer to that would be categorically no. What I'm getting right. is primarily hearsay. So what is your thought? Yeah.
Well, I mean, so Kanye comes on Timcast last night, and Tim, you know, instead of picking up threads Kanye's putting down all over the table about financial ruin and all kinds of really interesting stuff that is happening to him as a result of expressing a very controversial opinion, you know, which I'm not supporting or backing. But as an interviewer, I would be more interested in going down those threads. But instead, every time he gets with an interviewer, the interviewer has to express that they think anti-Semitism is bad. And I agree, anti-Semitism is bad, but I feel it's boring that we have to overly explain that we're not racist, that we're not anti-Semites all the time now. Whereas back in the day, it was just understood that most of us were not racist and most of us were not anti-Semites, except for extreme cases. So we didn't have to overly explain our kind of moral position all the time. And it's dumbing us down as a culture, because we're, instead of investigating people's states of mind and finding out really interesting things, even if we don't agree with them, we have to kind of first give our credentials that we're not hateful in any way. We're not homophobic. We're not this. We're not that. It's like, it's boring. It's just, frankly, it's just boring, because I'm assuming most people aren't racist. Most people aren't homophobic. Most people aren't anti-Semites. I really believe that. You know, I just think, you know what I mean? Am I making any sense? So then Kanye stormed out.
Yeah, did you hear that? I said you're preaching to the choir on that whole thing. Incidentally,
right.
So I'll have it in my head. Who is it? Who wrote the, I got an article that somebody sent me, and I'm not sure if it was from you, for the station, but it was talking about don't lose your Technicolor dream coat. Who wrote that?
That I wrote that today.
Seriously, man. That's great. That is really great stuff.
Thanks.
If you want to, you want to take off on that in some way, feel free, because that's great. As a matter of fact, that as I read it, I thought, man, this guy's going to do circles around me talking to him. That was great.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. I sent you that because you said something about my name, Joseph, and how that was perfect for the holidays. And I said, funnily enough, I just wrote something about the Joseph in the Bible, about the Technicolor dream coat. Basically, trying to the essay I wrote is just about not expecting other people to validate your dreams, but to just go forward with your dreams, because the story of Joseph and his Technicolor dream coat is his brothers were so jealous of his shine, so to speak, that they buried him. And though most of us don't get actually physically buried and left for dead, if you go out with your dreams and expect for your fellow man to say, hey, you're amazing, you're going to get disappointed. And in fact, most people have lost their Technicolor dream coats, so they cannot support your Technicolor dream coat. And your Technicolor dream coat is actually going to remind them of them losing their Technicolor dream coat, and they're not going to be happy about it. And that's just human nature. And that's just another example of the Bible trying to tell us, hey, you got to keep your Technicolor dream coat and keep rocking it, and don't worry about what other people think. Essentially, that's like the breakdown of what I was trying to communicate with that.
No, I think it was great. So let me ask this. I don't know if this would be considered a challenging thought, but certainly an additive thought would be that, unlike, like in a way, the Muppet movie. Did you see the Muppet movie where they were pursuing the dream, right?
I don't remember it, but I think I probably did see it.
Yeah. Okay. But it's basically like pursue your dream, sort of what you're saying. And there is another element that for me would be, I went along a certain amount of my life thinking I knew what my dream should be, and pursuing that relentlessly. And that at some point, which we can get into various things that you want to talk about, that dream became, should my dream be my dream for myself, or somehow tap into what God's dream for myself is? And my journey has been, it's like, it's okay to have a dream. I'm going to pursue it. But if it has to change, and I realize, looking back, I can see that why that dream that was like that song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers. And you look back and
right.
You think, God, hey, I'm so glad that quote dream didn't happen, because it was my dream. And so I'm trying to be in a place now that regardless of what is happening in my life, and believe me, no matter what our situations are, we all have real bummer stuff that happens in life, to be able to take that bummer situation and go, okay, that sort of interrupts what I thought my dream was. But if I really want what God's dream for me is, I'm going to believe he loves me and that I will grow as a result of flowing with whatever his dream is, because he's ultimately writing the story of my life. Anyway, this is just some thoughts.
Now who's preaching to the choir? Now who's going, say it loud again, Bob, for the people in the back. I'm with that entirely. Exactly. And those two things, by the way, aren't mutually exclusive. And I'm
absolutely
you'll agree with that, because the dream that you think you have for yourself, or the dream that you have for yourself, that then gets broken and fragmented and off course. And then you then have to dig deep on another level that puts you on another course that is in line with God's plan for you. Yeah, those things sort of happen in concert. So I would love to know how that happened for you, picking up on that thread. Like, where did you start? What was your dream to start? How did it come around and come to be? And then how did it shift?
Okay, well, first let me just give the first thing that popped in my head, and then I could get into more sort of historical timeline. But
Hey, Bob. I hate to cut you off, but let's cut you off right there. Go to a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bob Farnsworth right after these words on TNT.
TNT Radio's Michael Parker.
Some California workers who have won a lawsuit against the Goleta Water District, which is in Santa Barbara, California. Now, the idea behind the case was that these five plaintiffs who worked for the Goleta Water District claimed that they were discriminated against for the fact that they requested and got religious exemptions to avoid mandated vaccination. The lawyer for this group, Maria Gondero, said that I believe that we can use it in other cases as a precedent. Aha. So each plaintiff is going to receive the $25,000, and we'll take the wins where we can get them. So in this suit, the causes of action were violations of constitutional free speech, of religion, and the Fair Employment and Housing Act. So they took this to court and they won the settlement. So we will see what happens.
The program and Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here with Bob Farnsworth. So, Bob, you were just about to go into the story of your dream shaping and shifting.
Okay. So remind me, on that commercial I just heard, remind me to make a commentary on that, because I think I have an interesting perspective on what they were saying.
Let's start with that, because it's funny that you, because I was just saying to the engineer, Tim, sonic branding, because I know that you're into sonic branding. And so I was actually on that same wavelength with you. We'll start with that. Then we'll go into your dream story. Did you think to that? What was your professional opinion?
When they were talking about the importance of advertising, which I so agree, I have made talks at different advertising clubs or associations just for years. And, you know, let's say you've got a group of 100 people or 150 people, and I will ask these groups often, okay, so if you're doing a commercial and you've got 30 seconds to be on the air, you got 30 seconds to do whatever it is that you're going to do. Tell me, what do you feel like is the number one thing that somebody should go away with? And the hands would go up. You know, I think it should be, you've got to get that basic message, your one-liner message in there. And somebody else says, well, I think it's it needs to be the emotion that you're bringing out, that they go away with a good emotion about you. And then you go around the room and all these different answers. And finally, I will say, and this happens over and over, I'll say, well, let me ask y'all this. What about the name of your product? And they're like, oh, well, of course, that's the most important thing. I say, no. That's not what you think. You do not think that's the most important thing because that's not what you do. How many commercials have you seen on a national commercial these days that you get to the end of it and you go, man, that was so funny. I love that. So who is that for? And your friend says, I have no idea who it was for. But it was such a great, it was so funny. And well, what industry was it for? Well, I'm not really sure what industry it's for. Now, imagine somebody spending millions of dollars on a big ad campaign. And the takeaway is wonderful emotion. But you have no idea who did the spot. So they would assume that that was the most important thing, but they don't execute that. So when I think about radio and advertising, and hopefully whoever is listening to this might kind of go, he's making a good point there, that you can drill in the name of your product on radio, refer them to your website, which incidentally, websites, if you can make your website the name of your company, like our website is hummingbirdproductions.com, all right? And our company is Hummingbird Productions. If you can do that, then whatever you say on radio and you refer them to that .com, they can go right into your website and the radio plays this huge part of bringing them into your business. So that's just a thought that made me, y'all are bragging the commercial. I don't know if you listen to it, or do you listen to the commercials when they are airing?
Yeah, I did. Was your assessment of that one an effective ad commercial, or I mean a station commercial, or would you adjust it?
I guess it would be good for you to send me the script of it, because I talked so long just then, I made myself forget the content.
Well, no, listen, we appreciate the free advice from a professional of your stature, Bob. So, I mean, that was great, actually.
I've got a lot of thoughts about stuff about that. But anyway, yeah, that's probably a good thing that we took a little break to talk about it while it was on our mind.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. I mean, you were behind that. That's crazy. That one is epic. That's a classic.
I didn't really think you wish you were an Oscar Mayer wiener. That's very interesting. Maybe you need to go get some counseling. you just said
there's
I wish
been time. Hey, Bob, there's been times when I have wished I was an Oscar Mayer wiener. Thankfully, now is not one of them. Thankfully, I've graduated from that condition. But yeah, there might have been a bit of therapy involved.
Yeah, sometimes you just feel like... All right.
Yeah. Double your pleasure with Wrigley's double mint gum.
Double
listen. We're getting off track. Go to your dream again. I do want to get some backstory behind you. I want to figure you out, Bob.
So here's where
to you? What's going on?
Okay, so here was an adjustment of my dream. For example, we're recording artists at the time for ABC Records, and it was when we were first in Nashville, and the girl I was dating, who I ultimately married, but at the time she had decided she was going to date somebody else. And I was so in love with her. And that was back in, she was in Greenville and I'm in Nashville at this point. So my heart was just crushed. And then we got this message from the landlord of the place we were staying that they were going to be selling this building. And said that we needed the end of our contract was coming up and that they needed us to be out. So now I'm going to lose my home, I find out. And then during the recording process, we didn't know about taking one ear off. This is anybody that's learning how to record. It's a great thing to be aware of. Because we were performing
on key.
Yes, we were.
I have live. Bro, I have one ear off my headphones right now, dude. I always have one ear off, man. You're preaching to the choir here, Bob. Even
so
doing
you've
talk
got
radio.
A reality, right? Along with
yeah,
the fantasy land
exactly.
to Bob, right?
Yep.
So we were doing this album, and we just, when we put our, as soon as we put our headphones on, our pitch was way off. And so the guy that was our producer, he was a big songwriter, but this was his first production. And he was not aware of a lot of the ins and outs about the best way to get somebody to record. And so he was about to give up on us. And so then we get this message at the same time, I've lost my girlfriend. We're getting ready to lose our home. He gives us a message and says, hey, listen, we're going to give this one more shot. And if this doesn't work, we're going to have to abandon this whole record project. So then I find that out. And we're thinking, what are we going to do? We're going to lose the contract because we tried trying to really listen and all this kind of stuff, and nothing was working. So incidentally, we get into the studio, and the engineer says, kind of waiting for the producer to exhaust his possibilities. And then the engineer finally said, hey, have you guys ever tried like taking one ear off and listening with the music in the other ear? And we said, no.
That's crazy.
And then as soon as we did
that's
that,
so funny,
bam,
dude.
It was like we did the album and all. But in that moment, everything was collapsing. And I would pray, God, give me peace somehow. And I'd get 10 minutes of peace. And it's just the sinking feeling of my dream was going to go down the toilet. And then I had this thought, okay, part of the reason I'm feeling the impact of my dream so much is because I am into myself. What would it be if I could try to get out of myself? And so I went over to the Vanderbilt Hospital and sneaked up onto the cancer ward where I knew I would be able to talk with somebody that had a lot worse than I did. So I go into this guy's room, and he's all hooked up with machines and he's, you know, he's breathing in one of these breathing machines. So I said, you know, I'm so sorry for what you're having to deal with, but there is hope. So I started telling about my hope in Christ. And instead of he just turned it around on me. He says, oh, my friend, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I've got him on a breathing machine. Oh, that's exactly the way I feel. I'm so fortunate. I could not be happier in my whole life. I know what you're saying. And I mean, as I saw this guy basically praising God while he's struggling to breathe, and he probably didn't have life at all. I went out of that hospital, and let me tell you, Joseph, I got out of the front door of the hospital and I started jumping up and down with joy that in my bad state, I was still able to bring joy to somebody else. So that was a big turning point for me to realize that it does not matter what is going on in your life. You can be losing it all, that if you can get outside of yourself and realize that you still have an impact, it can give your life a different trajectory.
Wow. Okay, let me go to quick headlines. We'll be right back with Bob Farnsworth after these words on TNT.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. President Biden is calling on Congress to stop a nationwide rail strike by imposing September's tentative agreement on the unions. Dr. Anthony Fauci could not cite any studies that changed his mind about masking against COVID-19 during a recent deposition. New research shows fewer Australians are embracing cryptocurrencies following the plunges in their value in 2022.
If you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here with Bob Farnsworth. That's an amazing story you just said. It is all about service and finding purpose. There's like the when you have purpose-driven motivation and a motivation outside of yourself, it is so much easier to be motivated. If you're just revolving in a world of self, there's so much, you're so much more vulnerable to depression and just self-consciousness, self-centeredness that just spirals you down. It's really, it's like having like ankle weights and or whatever chains around you and trying to run. It's really difficult. But if you can get into an attitude of service and being of purpose and service, you know, you can move mountains for sure, but then it's not you moving them, right? It's God in conjunction with you.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot lately about when Paul goes into one of his bragging spiels, right? He always accompanies that with, this is not my strength. I do this through the strength of Christ. And he is simply wanting to say, look at what you too can endure with the strength of Christ, and that it is in our weakness that we're strong. And if we could really believe that, I mean, sometimes failure is what somebody might need to see from us, because they're looking to us like, oh man, you've got it together and you're so-and-so and I wish I were you or whatever. And you go, no, you don't. You do not. You've got your own set of things. I mean, how many times have you ever thought about just swapping your weights with somebody else? And you go, you know, really, I would rather have my weights. But if we can really believe, as Paul did, that in our weakness, that is where he can shine. See, people see you having a problem and overcoming that. That is so much. Well, I don't know how to weigh it, but let's just say it is very powerful. When someone sees you failing, but they see your strength, that you persevere.
It's powerful. You get that when you go into the 12-step rooms. I spent a lot of time in those 12-step rooms, and it's the same thing. It's like, you know, people go around the room talking about their problems, and the first thing you realize is it's spirituality, because it gets you out of the bondage of self, and you also realize, oh, being a human is meant to be difficult, because every one of these people is dealing with usually something worse than what I'm dealing with. And it's like, it just gives you a lot of comfort in that feeling of spirituality. But how did you find this path? Is this something you were born into, or was there something that happened in your life where you were, you know, pushed to the brink and had to arrive here?
That's very interesting. Well, let me ask this question just so I can picture in my mind, because I love Australians so much. Is our audience right now mostly Australian?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so, because we're all over the world. You know, I think there's somebody in New York listening right now. You know, there's people all over the world listening to us. So there's plenty of Australians listening to us as well. And they're in the future, by the way. For them, this is tomorrow, the next day in the afternoon. What's today? For them, it's Wednesday afternoon, Bob, if you can imagine.
Right, right. Yeah. But it's still live right now, right?
Oh, yeah, we're live.
Yeah, okay, to them. So I guess, in a sense, it's like I want to say, almost as if I'm speaking to everyone individually, to say, in your weakness, this is such a great opportunity, whatever you're going through. And you've got to have, no matter how good things are going, there got to be things that are really a struggle in your life as well, because life is so multifaceted. But in your weakness, those are the very places that God is exercising our muscle of faith. And as we cling to Him, all those fears that we have, we all know that usually they don't happen. But even if they do happen, even if your worst fears happen, God is there with us and loves us and is interested in what our best is. And I love that little poem about the footsteps in the sand. Do you remember that little poem?
Of course. I was carrying you the whole time, when, hey, but there was only one set of footsteps when I was going to of my worst times. Yeah, that was me carrying you, geezer. God talks to the geezer. He's like, mate, I was carrying you, mate. Geezer, come on.
Right, like, exactly right. For years and years I've been carrying your little butt, you know.
Well, I've been carrying you this whole time, mate, you bastard.
Yeah, and of course, you know, our Aussie friends out there are going, oh, that's the most sick imitation I've ever heard.
That wasn't Australian. I wasn't trying for Australian.
Okay, so, you're going to make your way out there. Okay, you want to hear my testimony is what you're basically saying, right?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so I was born in a family of six boys, no girls. And to this day, I think girls are wonderful because I never understood the whole women's lib thing because my mother was awesome. I grew up on a farm. The girls that were my cousins were just these precious girls. And so I had this amazing thought of, you know, God, girls are the greatest thing that God ever created. But my background was such that it was a guy's world, and girls were quite a mystery. And in my guy's world, wanted so much to be cool and just said GD this and GD that. My parents, we were churchgoers, but there were only a handful of people in that church that I would go, man, whatever a Christian is, I think there's a difference between this awesome guy and these other people that just obvious. And even as a kid, you recognize they're just here for some other reason, whether it's business associates or whatever, that to have a group of people they can hang with. But there were certain people that you knew their life was different. And those people kind of bugged me because I knew something was different. And they were people that I knew I should be more like. But as far as my life, I was a sort of a kleptomaniac guy. And I just loved to steal stuff from people and thought it's funny. My brother, Rick, my older brother, I had two brothers that played football for the University of Georgia. And the one right above me, he could whip anybody. But he was such a humble guy. And I'd be in the theater picking up the nasty popcorn boxes and throwing them at people like flying saucers. And, you know, they got all that nasty sugar from the Coke drinks that are spilled. And
oh,
you were
that guy, Bob. Oh, no.
I was that guy. And just the abuse of other people. And it did not even think about the impact. And my brother, Rick, I remember, would say stuff like, Bob, why do you do that? Why do you do that kind of stuff? And I'll be, well, it's kind of fun. Just so self-involved. And one day I came in to my bedroom and there was a big family Bible. And my mother never went back there, but a lady who worked in our home did. And her name was Annie Mae. And as far as I'm concerned, she will live on in infamy because all of us brothers talk about her. She was like our second mother. And actually, she had, and this is in the South, back in the 50s, her son had been actually pretty much red-handed, caught raping a white woman. And he was on death row. And we were amazed at how gracious she was, how kind she was, and wonder how could you have that going on in your life, your son that you love so much, but that you keep going. And she would just say, well, the Lord's going to take care of me. Everything's going to be all right, you know. Wow. And she was the one person in my life that you just knew that's who I want to be like. And so I came back in my room. And this Bible was wide open, like a big family Bible, to a verse that said, seek and ye shall find. And that would be seek and you will find, for those that don't really follow the King James stuff anymore. And I thought, Annie Mae put that back here. So I think I'm going to take her challenge up. And so I said, God, if you're there, I'm going to seek, and if you're not there, I'm going to seek, and if I don't find you, I'm going to figure that this is just a lie. Right. But if I do find you, I might just serve you. So, this was when I was 13 years old. And so that 13-year-old kid decided that I would read the Bible 3 chapters a night. And I did it for 8 months. I made my brother Hal, who is now a minister, listen to me. He hated me so much. I was such a crappy big brother. He hated me for making him listen to that stuff. And he decided he was going to work out with weight. He started working out with weights. He was my younger brother. But his goal in life, talking about purpose-driven life, his purpose was to build his muscles up so strong that he lived from the day he could beat up his, excuse my French, ass of a brother. So I kept reading this book through
this. This is a movie, by the way. This is a movie you need to produce. You're a producer as well. Oh, my Lord. This is too good, Bob. Go ahead. Keep going.
So, okay. I hope it's not boring you. Thanks for encouraging me. I'm always thinking, man, am I going on too long with this? But you asked for a testimony. So one night I was looking out at the stars after I finished reading, and I was laying on my bed looking out at the stars. Hal had already gone to sleep, and I felt like the stars were saying, do you think we made ourselves? Wow. And I had to honestly say, no, I don't think you made yourself. That doesn't make any sense. Right. No, I don't think you made yourself.
It's that simple, really.
Honestly, really.
It's that simple.
Yeah. And another voice came from behind those stars, and not audibly, but just in my heart, I heard this voice that said, that's correct. I made those stars. Now, do you think you would want to worship me since I made those stars? And it was like the Holy Spirit came in. I said, absolutely. That's what I'll do. My life just radically changed. And instead of reading that book, the Bible, which my mother-in-law, she lived with us for 8 years, this amazing lady, and we would be discussing some theological issue. And instead of saying, well, let's see what the Bible says about it, she would say, well, let's see what God has to say about that. And that's the way I'm trying to think about the Bible. What does God have to say about it? All this politically correct stuff that blows around, the societies change, they ebb and they flow. But the word of God, what he says about stuff, is if we cling to that, we will be right. We may suffer persecution. We will certainly be misunderstood in this politically correct climate. But I just think that love, the love of Christ through us, will overcome that. So Karen, going back to my story, about 2 weeks after become a Christian. I was a born-again Christian at that point. And I said to my big brother, Rick, the one who said, Bob, why do you do that stuff? I said, hey, Rick, can I talk to you for a minute? And I was 14 by this time because I read for 8 months. I was 14 years old. And I said, Rick, he said, okay, what do you want? And I said, well, you know those clothes that are in my closet that we always argue about? I just want you to know that you can wear anything I've got in my closet. But if there's something that is brand new that I've never worn before, I hadn't even put it on yet, you can wear those too. And my brother Rick, I thought he was going to have a heart attack because it was like he's suddenly speaking to someone who he does not know. And he walked away, and about 15 minutes later, he came back and repeated my words. He said, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And I said, well, sure. He said, you know those clothes that are in my closet that we argue and fight about all the time? I said, yeah. He said, well, you can wear any of those clothes you want. Now, if I haven't ever worn it before, you can wear that too. And you know what we did? We doubled our wardrobe in that very moment. And wow, that brother became the most amazing big brother to me. So that was where my life completely changed. And it was really interesting because if you know where you're going, it's amazing. People are, unfortunately, we are like sheep. And if you know where you're going and move in that direction, now that's when you're talking about the dream. There's the dream. The dream to say, Lord, I would like to follow you wherever you go. And when you do that, people will follow. They'll make fun of you. They'll go behind your back. But in their heart, and they might make fun of you behind your back, but in their heart of hearts, they're thinking, that guy knows, or that girl knows where she's going. And I don't know if I want to go there, but I have to admit there's a lot of power in somebody who knows where they're going. And especially if it can not be all about you.
Damn, Bob, you're laying it down over here. I mean, I'm blown away. I wanted to go into, you know, film scoring, what, you know, your professional life and all this stuff. And you're just, I don't know, you're over here, got me in tears over here, Bob.
This That's so kind.
I mean, seriously, it's amazing stuff, man. It's really inspiring stuff. Thank you for sharing that. And let me go to a quick break. We'll be right back. I promise I'll ask a bit about his professional life as well after these words on TNT.
I try to avoid the headlong rush into full-throated support or criticism of someone. The former is how you get your heart broken, and the latter is how you can destroy your own credibility. It's not wishy-washy to take a wait-and-see attitude and to compliment the good, criticize the bad. Still haven't made up my mind about Elon Musk, but I'm telling you, the longer time goes on, the more I like what I see. He tweeted yesterday, "This is a battle for the future of civilization. If free speech is lost, even in America, tyranny is all that lies ahead." He's absolutely correct, and Elon has been a staunch supporter of free speech, which is why the left has lost their ever-loving minds, even going so far as buying a car from a company started by Nazis to protest Twitter being Nazi or something. They're also going crazy over him having a pistol on his nightstand. I, on the other hand, was more concerned by the 4 cans of caffeine-free Diet Coke. Elon, baby, that stuff will kill you. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
The extensive reach of big tech companies combined with government's penchant for digital identity, vaccine passports, and digital currencies has given rise to concerns that social credit systems will soon be coming to the West. MasterCard has developed a carbon calculator that can inform consumers of their carbon footprint, allowing them to make more mindful spending decisions. Alibaba Holdings president J. Michael Evans claims that the company is creating an app to track an individual user's carbon footprint from their traveling and eating choices on their platform. Writer Kit Knightley notes this Chinese company is the second largest e-commerce company in the world after Amazon, and through subsidiaries, runs the largest domain name market, email provider, and cloud storage services in China, and the largest payment platform in the world. They also supply online pharmacy services, provide computer technology to hospitals, and own the biggest e-map navigation company in China. Knightley questions if Alibaba would soon reward other correct choices that had nothing to do with the environment and punish incorrect choices. And of course, how far behind would Google, Amazon, and Apple be?
And now a news update. The president's doctor has confirmed that the president is suffering from gastric distress. Apparently, he can't stop Putin.
You're stupid.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I am here with Bob Farnsworth. They say if you don't feel the blues, you got a hole in your soul. I could say the same thing for Bob Farnsworth's testimony. That was incredible, Bob, and really inspiring. I'm wondering, though, speaking of the blues, when did music come into the picture? Because that's what you've sort of made your whole professional life revolving around, I guess, right? Music. So music must play a huge role. How did that come to be?
It came from my mother, and I'll tell you that, but I thought I'd give you an interesting wrap-up story on that other thing. My brother wanted to whip my butt.
You're not going to let me veer this to your career, are you? Okay. You know what? You know what, Bob? We only have 10 more minutes left, so I'm going to let you go ahead and go with where you're going, actually less than that. And you know what? We're just going to have to do a follow-up interview sometime. You're going to have to agree to come on. And we're just going to go into advertising and music and stuff like that, too. But I love this kind of stuff, too. But There's okay, a whole other side of you that needs to get covered as well here.
Well, I guess it's all subsidiary to the other stuff. And I'll tell you one of my favorite stories, the greatest story I learned in the music business. But right quick, I want to just say, my brother Hal, who was going to whip my butt, when I became a Christian, he was furious because it ended his being able to whip my butt, because I never gave him a reason to. I ended up being this big brother, and I just was so apologetic to the way I treated him. And I just wanted everything in the world to be a great big brother. And I gave him absolutely nothing to want to whip my butt about anymore. And at first he was furious, but then the love thing caught on. And then he became a Christian, and he fully understood. And now he is a minister. He just actually retired from his ministry and had started a ministry in Uganda. An amazing guy. But God works in strange ways. So that's sort of an interesting little twist on that whole story, that the guy that wanted to whip me ended up loving me. And I still to this day jokingly say, are you sure you've forgiven me for the way I treated you and your kid? Okay, so now that I finished that story, let me tell you the greatest, and this is about music, okay? But this is the greatest lesson, and I learned this. This guy's not a believer. Now I can't tell you his name. But let's just say he's one of the greatest guitar players, huh?
Oh, I know, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I met him, by the way. I opened up for him when I was a kid in Cleveland. I met him. I opened up for him with my blues band in Cleveland 2 times.
Really?
Nautica. Yeah, once at Columbus Veterans Memorial when I was still in high school. And some guy walked up to him with crutches. And this was like after a sound check. And the crutches fell. And it was this really awkward moment. And Stevie just said, I bet you love that sound. And it was the most beautiful thing you could have said in that moment. And the guy was like, he was a little embarrassed and shooken at first. And then he was like, yeah, I do. And he smiled.
Oh, that is so cool. I love it. Well, you know, interesting. Yeah. This sounds like baloney, but it's not. The last thing he was ever in the studio doing was for a commercial for us. And right now, I believe it or not, I did not. It was not one of the ones that I produced. And I'm drawing a blank on what the product was. There's so many thousands of products that we've done. But the last thing he did in the studio was a thing that he did for Hummingbird. Is that weird that you'd bring him up? So we have that nice little connection there. Yeah. So here's my favorite story of every – if people get this – I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of freaking sage or something, because I'm so screwed up. But this is a great story. This incredible guitar player taught my son how to play guitar. And my son got to be so good, by the time he was 17 years old, he was playing rhythm, not necessarily lead stuff, but rhythm guitar sessions for me. And so this guy, so at the end of one of the sessions, this great guitar player and I, we're going to work on a Kentucky Fried Chicken spot together. So he comes into the office, into the studio, and Jonathan sees him, his teacher, walk in the room. And so he puts his guitar down. And his teacher says, what'd you put your guitar down for? He says, because I'm embarrassed. He says, embarrassed? I'm your teacher. You play in front of me all the time. He says, I know it. It's a session, and it's just more pressure, and I'm embarrassed. He says, Jonathan, stand up. So Jonathan stands up, and he's about this guy's pretty short. He's looking straight into Jonathan's eyes. He says, Jonathan, let me ask you something. You got a fingerprint? And Jonathan says, yes, sir. He says, your fingerprint like anybody's fingerprint in the whole wide world? And Jonathan says, no, sir. He said, well, see, that's the way I see music. I've got my musical fingerprint. And you've got your musical fingerprint. And he gets right in Jonathan's face and says, and this is the great, I can't even say his name now.
Stevie Ray Vaughan. Dude, it's Stevie Ray Vaughan, bro. Come on. Ray Vaughan,
maybe better than Stevie Ray Vaughan as far as the sheer technical ability to play. Crazy
okay,
good.
Okay, okay.
This guy that says to Jonathan, I've got my musical fingerprint and you got your musical fingerprint, and he gets right in his face and says, and I can never do what you do like you do.
Wow.
I can never do what you do like you do what you do. That's what he said. And Damn. He said, now get on that guitar and play for me. And Jonathan sat down and he banged out that part with such confidence. But you know what
That's
else happened?
Amazing.
I heard him say that, and all my whole career, I was like, man, well, I would like to be like that. I wish I could play better than, but you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And gave me freedom. I just felt like that scene that freedom. Mel Gibson, freedom.
Freedom, Bob. At the minute music is here, I got to say, you're one of the most inspirational people I've ever talked to. I'm not joking, man. It's like I feel like I'm saved on the level of my soul and my creative endeavors at this point, man. I got 30 seconds left. I got to say thank you, Bob Farnsworth, hummingbirdproductions.com. Go check it out. And Bob, I hope I get to talk to you again, man, and pick this up from where we leave it off, man. Thank you for coming on.
God bless you. Thank you. I loved it.
I love it. See you soon, Bob. I'll talk to you later. Keep listening, everybody. We'll be right back with more on TNT.